Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt US Kids, and the Ad Council.
DePose from The Faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
One of the things I've talked about with you guys over the years is not unique to the United States, but it's particularly bad in the United States, which is when you have the degree of connections between media figures who are ostensibly journalists or reporters or supposed to be people that are sort of critically analyzing and talking to you about what government is doing. When you have those media people so closely tied in with, friendly with, involved with, whatever, the very people in government that they're supposed to be covering, you don't really get journalism by definition or in any real sense of the word. And one of the things that we've seen over time, over the last year since the January 6th Trump riots, is the degree to which right-wing media like Fox News and others are so connected to the Trump administration. We've learned about these text messages that were exchanged between Sean Hannity and Mark Meadows and others in the aftermath of the Trump riots about how best to manage it and how this is a bad thing and Trump's got to stop talking about the stolen election. But then he would go on the air and he would support the Trump narrative and do something totally different. And part of what goes on, and I've talked about this before because I've been in some of these circles before on the periphery, is people don't want to lose access, and that influences a lot of how media behaves. They become an acquaintance of someone in power. They start to get access to them. And next thing you know, you're Maria Bartiromo, who has a direct line to Trump and nods along to any insane notion that he mentions. So that's one piece of it, that we don't want to lose access part. The other part of it is how they're actually, in some cases, is almost no daylight between the media and the government piece. And there's now an explosive new report with another little chapter in that. Sean Hannity, Fox News propagandist, sent Trump's former White House press secretary, Kayleigh McEnany, a post-riot playbook, according to newly released texts. Fox News's Sean Hannity, reports HuffPost, sent Kayleigh McEnany a plan to handle Trump the day after the deadly Capitol riot, according to newly released text messages. Hannity messaged McEnany on January 7th with a, quote, five-point approach for conversations with Trump. Hannity was telling McEnany how to manage Trump, according to a letter that the House Committee investigating the riots released on Thursday. The first two items on Hannity's plan of action read, no more stolen election talk. Again, this is a trend. Hannity recognized that the stolen election talk was not helping Trump. Two, yes, impeachment and 25th Amendment are real and many people will quit. So it seems like Hannity is telling McEnany, say to Trump, you could be impeached. The 25th Amendment could be used. Your allies will quit if that happens, sort of like to warn Trump. And the letter didn't reveal points 3, 4, and 5. And McEnany responded in those text messages, love that. Thank you. That is the playbook I will help reinforce. Hannity told McEnany it was, quote, key that, quote, no more crazy people were allowed to access the then president. McEnany responded, yes, 100%. McEnany, in the days after the election, remember that McEnany appeared with those crazy people. I believe there was one particular press conference, and I don't know if it's the one where Rudy's face melted. It's all kind of a blur. But McEnany appeared, remember, in her role as a Trump campaign staffer, not as the press secretary, alongside some combination of Sidney Powell, Jenna Ellis, and or Rudy Giuliani. And yet, McEnany knew and agreed that these are crazy people around the president. So there's 3, 4, 5 different important layers here. One is this cozy relationship between Fox and the Trump administration wasn't serving anybody. You had people at Fox and people around Trump who knew how insane this all was. I mean, listen, quite frankly, we now have text messages that show us Kayleigh and Hannity both thought there were crazy people around Trump giving him bad ideas. The stolen election talk was a bad idea. And yet they both went out and reinforced it, showing that this was not them behaving on principle. This was them behaving on, call it self-preservation for McEnany, call it ratings for Hannity, maintaining access to Trump, whatever. So that's one aspect of this. And then, of course, number two, that nobody is better off when you have this. Journalism is not better off. The American people are not more informed. The people running government are not running government in a way that is better for the people. Everybody loses in these situations. And I know that there will be people who say, well, you know, Chris Cuomo seemed to be pretty friendly with Hillary Clinton back in 2016. They clearly know each other. Yes, they clearly have, are the Clintons and the Cuomos clearly seem to know each other. But there was not this operationally indistinguishable relationship that was going on when it came to governance. And it just doesn't, it seems like such a lame comparison when you now see the connections between Fox and the Trump administration. So here's just, you know, the text message is just another example. I don't want to spend a ton of time on this, but I do want to just point out that this NFL football player, Aaron Rodgers, is continuing to spread straight up baseless COVID disinformation. And the guy is a role model to so many people. You know, when I was a kid, I read this book by Charles Barkley, a former basketball player, about how he really shouldn't be a role model. He behaves in certain ways because he knows he is, as a guy who's in sports, but that really these people should not be role models. And that had, there was truth to that in the 90s. It's so much more true today. Here is Aaron Rodgers now on the Pat McAfee show saying that the COVID fact checks about do vaccines work and stuff like that, they're all done by Big Pharma, so you can't trust any of them.
I will say, I don't believe that hatred and fear and name calling and any of this stuff is going to get us out of this pandemic. It's going to be love and connection and actually conversation and debate and information sharing. And not information sharing that's fact checked by the same individuals right. who are, you know, running the pharmaceutical industry.
He wants information shared that is not being fact checked. That is fascinating, right?
Oh,
which is a lot of the, you know, when you look into some of those connections, it is interesting to see some of the connections between fact checkers and boards
This guy thinks he's absolutely brilliant, guys. He thinks he's figured out the ultimate truth, and he even delivers it in this tone where it's, he's not taking pleasure, but we can't have fact checks from Big Pharma. The vaccine, of which there have been, is it hundreds of millions, or have we gotten to a billion doses given? The vaccines have been studied in randomized controlled trials. In all sorts of different countries by people not associated with Big Pharma. In the journals, they disclose their conflicts of interest. Studies on do masks work. They've been randomized control, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And this guy was almost the permanent Jeopardy host, and he's going around spreading this stuff. As a reminder, here is the same guy, Aaron Rodgers, admitting he took medical advice from Joe Rogan when he got COVID. And even Pat McAfee couldn't contain his laughter when that was mentioned.
I consulted with a now good friend of mine, Joe Rogan.
Right.
After he got COVID. And I've been doing a lot of the stuff that he recommended in his podcasts and, you know, on the phone to me. Mm. And I'm going to have the best immunity possible now.
Yeah. So that's that was that. Also, more recently, he said, Aaron Rodgers said that there were people watching the Green Bay Packers and rooting against the Green Bay Packers only because of his vaccination status, which actually may be true, but they're not like the normal football fans. There's no doubt that there are people who had no clue who Aaron Rodgers was. They found out he was saying very strange things about COVID and they were rooting for him to lose. That's not wrong. I think he's right about that.
There were a ton of people tuning in, rooting against us for one reason and one reason only. It's because of, you know, my vaccination status and them wanting to see us lose so they could pile on and enjoy and revel in the fact that, you know, my vaccination status was some sort of reason why we haven't had success in the playoffs or whatever it might be, some sort of correlation.
Yeah. Now, I didn't hear that once. So it's, you know, there's always this self-importance to these guys, even just the way that he talks. There's this air of self-importance. It's true that there are some people who wanted to see Aaron Rodgers lose because they think he's a prick. But, I mean, that's the long and short of it. I have not heard anyone say that the reason the Green Bay Packers didn't do better is because he's unvaccinated. It doesn't make any sense. I've not heard anyone say that. It doesn't really pass the sniff test that anybody would say that. And the really tragic thing here is, you know, we laugh when Aaron Rodgers says, well, the advice I got is from Joe Rogan. And even Pat McAfee, who seems to go with a lot of the things Rodgers says, is like, oh, God. We laugh at that. But there's so many people that don't listen to doctors and they don't listen to epidemiologists and they don't listen to public health officials. They listen to Joe Rogan. And if Aaron Rodgers wants to start giving advice about COVID treatment, they'll listen to Aaron Rodgers as well. And that's the real tragedy of what it is that is going on here. Let me know your thoughts. Were you rooting for Aaron Rodgers to lose because of his vaccine status? You can let me know on Twitter, where you can find me at dpacman. And you can also find me on Instagram at david.pacman. We have a great Friday show for you today. We will be on the ground at the Trump rally in Conroe, Texas tomorrow. Hope you'll be following that live stream. Stay with us. Quick break and right back. Remember that the David Pacman Show does depend on the support of viewers and listeners who get memberships at joinpacman.com. It is a direct method of support. It's not you get a $100 cable bill and $4 goes to Fox News. You sign up at joinpacman.com and you're saying this is the one show I am supporting here. And you can use the coupon code WOW22. To get a large discount off of your membership. Let's hear from some people in the audience. We now use Discord to hear from people. You can go to davidpacman.com/Discord to find the Discord. And we're going to speak to people. Let's go first to Michael in Philly. Michael, you are on the air. What's on your mind today?
Can you hear me well?
Yes, I can.
Thanks for picking me, David. I was wondering, a lot of people think that it's a really, really bad idea at this point in time, considering how widespread the Omicron variant is. That's what my question concerns. Do you think that here in the United States, because of how mutations can sometimes be worse than people expect, Omicron being an example, do you think that mandates of any kind are a bad idea?
Are you when you say mandates of any kind, are you saying vaccine mandates or other mandates?
Mandates of any kind, mask mandates, vaccine mandates, gathering mandates, mandates of any kind.
Right now or at any point?
Right now.
I think for the next month, there still should be some restrictions. But I agree with people like Vincent Racaniello that we are getting close to the point at which it's going to start making sense to ease up on a lot of these different things. I think businesses requiring people to be vaccinated, it's up to the business. It's completely legal, and I think it's fine. But I do think that as we move in the direction of endemicity and it's completely impossible to avoid exposure at this point, exposure, remember, not infection, we're certainly, right, we appear to be moving in the direction where it's going to start to make sense to ease up off a lot of that stuff. Now, that could change. That could change. All right. I appreciate the call. Thank you. A lot going on there. Background noise and other noises and sort of different things. So we're going to move on for the time being. And I do appreciate the call. Let's go next to, oh, I don't know. Why don't we go to Frank from Jersey? Frank, you're on the air.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Good. And please, please, please turn off Discord notifications, because we're every time that blings, it's coming through.
I'm sorry. I have the Do Not Disturb on, so I'm not sure why. Is there something else that I should have set on?
Yeah, in your settings notifications, just turn all of those damn notifications off. Settings notifications, and then we'll stop hearing that and it'll be beautiful.
Okay, how's that?
All right, let's. What was on your mind today? I don't know if it worked, but let's see. No, it did not work. But so, give me your question, and we'll take the answer offline.
Okay, I'm sorry. So, basically, I'll just start with the first one. Right now, I'm having a little bit of a family issue where, my parents were originally very, you know, logical with their decisions regarding COVID and being safe and, you know, actually wearing their mask and everything. But now, unfortunately, it's kind of gotten to a point where, I mean, you know, he even showed up yesterday with like a cloth mask, and it was just something from like the doctor's office with like an insurance name on it. And, you know, this is somebody who does understand N95 and things like that. They're not vaccinated. They just keep kind of getting more and more crazy conspiracies off the internet. I'm kind of finding it hard to, you know, even using some of your advice in earlier streams that I've watched of yours to combat conspiracy theorists, finding it really, really hard to talk to them. Yeah. With a lot of the kind of, like you keep putting it lately, very, very weaponized information.
What's a conspiracy theory? Info? Well, give me an, what's a conspiracy theory that they believe right now?
I mean, I'm almost embarrassed to say them, to be honest, but like, just given ideas like recently New Year's, I really wanted to see them. And instead he was telling me that because me and the woman I live with is vaccinated, the vaccine is going to spread COVID to them, and we're the ones that is actually going to cause it through the spike proteins and like 8,000 other, you know.
Yeah,
what I mean?
That's one of the craziest ones. That's like the woman who said she was experiencing rectal bleeding when she went near vaccinated people. I mean, that's a pretty deep hole you got to dig your way out of. You know, I don't know. And you're saying that the casual Socratic method of questioning doesn't work with them.
I have tried almost every logical type of, like, you know, reasoning, even for example, they're slightly religious. I'm not into it, but, you know, they for some reason believe that this is something that is like an opinion thing and not fact or science based.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is, I can't crack this wall. And unfortunately, my mother just goes based off of whatever my father finds. And he's just stuck on the internet for 8 or 10 hours a day on, you know, Rumble and BitChute and all this other garbage.
Oh, my God. So listen, exactly. It sounds like you've tried a lot of things. I think as a last ditch effort before considering, you know, to what degree you want to continue engaging in this stuff would be try to go with a very common sort of psychoanalytic question, which is, what would it mean for you if this belief weren't true, if you were wrong about this? Because sometimes if you can't pierce with the Socratic questions, like how did you come to believe this? Sometimes people have a lot of emotion and psychology and meaning tied up in their beliefs. And it's a last ditch. I don't know that it's going to do too much, but I might say, what would it mean to you if it weren't true that walking around near vaccinated people did any of this stuff and the vaccines actually work? Like, what would that mean to you? And see what happens. That's my only other idea.
That's actually a really interesting perspective. I appreciate that, because I know it's a hard kind of thing to just throw at you. But listen, I know I already took up a lot of time. I really appreciate all the work that you do. And, you know, you really put out a great article every day. So thank you very
much. All right. Thanks, Frank from Jersey. And learn from Frank, guys. Turn off all notifications, and try not to use speaker. We can do this, folks. I know we can do this, but we've got to all work together. All right, let's go. We have two callers named Tristan. We have Tristan in Boston and Tristan in Kansas. Let's maybe start first with Tristan in Boston. You are on the air. Tristan in Boston, you are on the air. Tristan in Boston, last call for Tristan in Boston. No such luck there. Let's try instead with Tristan in Kansas. Tristan in Kansas, you are on the air.
Hey, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay, well, you kind of pulled a Trump there, David, because I'm actually in Kansas City, Missouri. But
okay.
It's okay.
It all gets truncated, so all I could see was Kansas.
Yeah, yeah. So, going to the situation in Ukraine.
Yes.
Would you say there's a lot of quote unquote Western hysteria about this? Because I'm just nonstop getting bombarded with news articles and videos about it and everything. But, you know, people I talk to in Ukraine, they're saying it's being hysterized, or I don't know the right word for it.
Yeah, I understand. Well, I think there's a couple different things going on. First of all, a lot of the discussion around Russia-Ukraine is related to Russia's role in the world as one of the three major superpowers, along with China and the U.S. So a ton of the discussion, you know, if there's a population that's about to be invaded, that population being Ukrainians, one of the priorities should be, what's going to happen to Ukrainians? What do Ukrainians want? What is this? So, for example, Israel is helping to evacuate Jews from Ukraine under the belief that if Russia were to invade, it's probably not particularly good for Jews. That's about the people. And that's being lost significantly because the context is Putin versus Biden, and will China take this as an opportunity to be aggressive with Taiwan or whatever the case may be? It makes sense because these are big geopolitical players. But I do think that there's kind of a missing element, which is the Ukrainian people. That's a part of it. The second part is I do think that there's significant politicization here. Individuals looking to there are left and right wingers that are increasingly aligning with authoritarian regimes like Putin. There's an opportunity to call Biden weak no matter what he does. And so there's a lot of political opportunism as well.
Of course. Do you think there's an actual possibility of World War III, like a strong possibility in your eyes, or do you think that's hyperbolic?
I think that's hyperbolic. And I know that there's, you know, NATO allies are increasingly sort of preparing and putting troops at the ready. But I really don't think this is something that even if Russia were to invade Ukraine, I would bet against this going anywhere else into any kind of world war scenario in the immediate. 5 years from now in a totally different situation, maybe. But I think that that's hyperbolic.
Yeah, it's really reminded me a lot of, you know, I get really annoyed when people compare Putin to Hitler, but I will say that it does mirror the beginnings of World War II a lot, where Hitler would annex his, you know, the territories and
the immediate surroundings. Germany. Yeah. Here's the difference, though. Here's the difference. The world is completely different than it was in the World War II era. And as a result, both of different geopolitics, technology, and by technology, I mean both weapons and surveillance technology. I don't think that just because there's something about it that is similar, it means the outcome is going to be the same. These could be famous last words, but I think we have to consider the context and the world in which this is happening.
Yeah, exactly. That was my idea, but I just keep getting bombarded with articles and fear mongering. So it's been giving me anxiety. This helps a lot. I have friends in Europe I talk to about this too. So it's good to have different perspectives and not just be stuck in like little bubbles. But thank
Absolutely.
You so much, David.
My pleasure. Thanks for the call. Very, very important topic for sure. Wow, folks, the phone lines are packed today and we're going to be speaking to a variety of different people. Why don't we go next to George in Dublin? George, you were on the air. What's on your mind today?
Hi, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, great. So my question is actually about Ukraine as well. And it's given that the US and NATO have violated their promise from the 90s to not expand eastwards, can we really, and given that the U.S. has military bases all over the world,
yes,
can we really say that Putin is the provocateur in this situation? Because it seems to me that, you know, from a structural perspective, you know, NATO has been provoking Russia for decades by expanding eastwards.
I don't buy it. No, I don't buy it. I mean, there's at a certain point, we have to be able to say, wait, hold on a second. We can do any kind of theorizing and analysis we want. We can have the conversation you're having about NATO, but you would have to believe that someone is sort of forcing Putin to mass troops at the border, and it just seems like a tough bridge for me to cross. No, I don't think so. That's a little bit too far. I'm fine with structural analysis for sure. But no, I don't. That's not striking me as something that makes sense to me.
I mean, I think I certainly agree that Putin is a dishonest actor.
Okay.
But I don't really think any serious person could disagree with that. But it just seems to me that you know, from the perspective of the Russian presidents, you know, what good is NATO's word or the U.S.'s word when they said we're not going to expand eastwards?
Sure.
And then 14 Eastern countries from countries from the former Eastern Bloc get to join NATO, you know.
But, you know, I think that the counter still is, if Putin is massing troops at the border with Ukraine, he may be planning to invade Ukraine, and it makes sense to game out that possibility, you know. And I say this as someone who doesn't want any conflict whatsoever.
Yeah, sure, sure, definitely. By the way, I'm sure you heard, but Justice Breyer is about to retire, so
yes,
Biden may have a chance to appoint someone to the Supreme Court.
Indeed.
So yeah, thanks for taking my call.
All right, my pleasure. Thank you so much for the call. Very much appreciate that. Let's check in next with Ben from Charleston, South Carolina. Ben, you're on the air.
Hey, David. How's it going?
It's going well, thanks. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, long-time listener, first time catching the stream. So
thank you.
Yeah, so I have two things. So one, you might even call it a critique of the David Pakman show.
Please.
And then the second would be a short question afterwards.
Okay.
So I noticed, might have been yesterday or a couple days ago, the topic was the March for Life rally.
Okay.
And so I noticed that in your speaking about the March for Life rally, so I really respect the David Pakman show and what you do here, because it's one of the few political commentary shows where I know that you have a respect for critical thinking, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I worry that sometimes with like a few different topics, you sort of allow yourself to have this, the kind of categorical strawmanning, you might say, that some others engage in. So for instance, a sort of verbatim phrase that I heard was used was, you know, these pro-life people don't respect women's choice, something along those lines. And I just want to caution, because I do know people personally, because I have a graduate degree in philosophy, that have carefully considered the moral justifications and the moral ramifications of the issue of abortion, and have just come to the conclusion, looking at the different moral considerations of that complex topic, and said, look, you know, a fetus has the, you know, full status of a valuable human life, and therefore, you know, is entitled to protection by the state over and above bodily autonomy. So do there exist lots of people in the pro-life crowd that really just want to go back to the 1940s and 50s where women have less rights? Absolutely. There's no question about it. But we have to be careful not to extend that to like everyone that holds that particular position.
Okay, yeah, I mean, there's a lot there. And I mean, so what's the fallacy I fell prey to? Because, like, sure, there's people that come to be anti-abortion for different reasons. I would grant that. But what's the critique of what I said?
So the critique would be maybe like a whole to part or a generalization. So saying, like, grouping everyone that has a particular view into other particular views that you see as antecedent. So, you know, these pro-life people don't respect women's choice, whereas there are actually philosophers that have seriously considered, you know, the trade-offs between choice versus rights and what counts as a valuable life.
But
it's, like
it sounds like, but if I understand what you're saying,
sure,
there are people who are against abortion whose interpretation of when life begins means that it is a higher priority to prevent abortion than to allow women to choose, right? Is that, I mean, that's based, they've come to a particular
sure.
conclusion where the woman's ability or right to choose is not as important as preserving the fetus, right? I mean, that it just sounds like you're saying some people are against abortion because they don't think that the woman has a right to choose given the circumstances.
Right.
So I acknowledge that. I mean, there's lots of people
who don't
think that it's a woman's right to choose. Yeah.
Well, so we have to be careful here, obviously. So obviously we would say that it's not anyone's right to choose to kill someone as an adult, right? I mean, it's not your right to choose when to kill someone as an adult. So abortion is a very complex topic in that it deals with things like consciousness, personhood, choice, yes, bodily
and,
autonomy.
And there's like no different... one way to define when a fetus is a person. I think that, you know,
right,
100 people would have 100 different opinions on that.
Yeah, it's complicated. I just caution against the sort of inflammatory language. And like I said, it doesn't happen often because I really respect the show,
yeah,
where you have a commitment to critical thinking. I just caution sometimes with the categorical speech, where we're not lumping everyone into a sort of camp, especially like just, oh, well, you have this conclusion. Well, it must mean you have these reasons which are pernicious. Like,
okay, so it's the reasons. You're saying there are people who hold the belief I mentioned, but they hold it after thinking about it more deeply.
Right, yeah.
Okay, and all right, I'm totally open to that. Yeah. Totally open to that.
Okay. And then the little question afterwards is, so like I said, I have a graduate degree in philosophy, and I'm currently a science teacher at a high school. I'm petitioning pretty hard to my administration to be able to teach a critical thinking class next year. I really do believe that critical thinking class should be a core class, maybe even required in a high school setting. Do you agree with me? And then what in your view is the best way to achieve that?
Yes, I 100% agree. And because I don't know enough about how local school curricula are determined, I would not be the right person to advise on how to make it a reality. I would talk to education activists about that. I appreciate the call. I've got a lot of people holding, so I'm going to move on. We're going to take a very quick break, and then we will be right back with more calls. So if you're holding on to talk to me, don't hang up quite yet. Let's go next to Nick from St. Louis, Missouri. You're on the air.
Hi, David. My question for you is, so with the 2022 midterms coming up, I just would think it'd be a no-brainer for Biden to take some sort of stance on decriminalizing marijuana on like the federal level.
Yeah.
I just think that'd be an easy layup for Democrats to, you know, make a comeback since everyone's saying that they're going to get slaughtered in the 2022 midterm. So what's your opinion on that?
I completely agree. This sort of came up a little bit on the show last week. I think that it would be an easy, obvious net positive for Biden to push decriminalization. There are a couple different perspectives on how it could be done. Could it be done by executive order? Could it be done by simply directing the DEA to sort of make it happen? There are some who say he can't do it, although I've not found those legal arguments compelling as a layperson. But yeah, I completely agree. There are people who would be mad at Biden decriminalizing cannabis, but it would be an obvious net positive. And I think he has very little interest in actually trying to make it happen.
Do you think his reluctance to not try to make anything happen on that front is because of his own personal or religious beliefs?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's sort of like with the student loan thing, right? Where people are saying, why isn't he forgiving student loan debt? Like, I never thought he cared about student loan debt. And I think at one point he said he would do 10 grand and people were saying 50. At no point did I believe he really cared about it. I don't think it's religious. I don't think it's personal. I think there's just certain issues he doesn't care about. And he sort of talked about them because he was running a campaign and people imposed these issues on him. I just don't think he cares. I wish I had something deeper, but I think it's that simple.
But I mean, going to student loans, but given that his wife is a teacher,
yeah,
you would think that would have some sort of impact in, you know, the priorities.
I agree.
Especially because it's so popular, those two issues on the left, marijuana, maybe more, you know, everyone. But I don't see why no action or no even updates, even avoiding questions and briefings about those issues.
I agree with you 100%. And, you know, there's two sides on this. One is he's just being advised incorrectly. The other one would be there are downsides you and I aren't thinking of. And that's why he's staying away from these issues. It's probably a mix of both.
Okay, well, thanks for answering my question, David.
All right, my pleasure. Great to hear from you. Why don't we go next to really people from all over the world today. It's quite a situation. Let's try Attack from Denmark. Attack, you are on the air. And for whatever reason, I'm unable to unmute Attack, and I don't know why. That's really weird. I should have all of the necessary permissions, but I am unable. I apologize, Attack. If a moderator can look into why I am unable to unmute Attack from Denmark, I would love to go back to Attack. Very, very strange. Wow. Let's try Greg from Detroit. Wow, now I actually can't unmute anyone right now. That is really weird. Let me see if I can, let's see if I can reconnect. Is our system failing? Let's try going back to Attack from Denmark. Ah, there we go. Attack from Denmark, you are now on the air. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hello. Can you hear me?
I can.
All right. Yeah, so I had a question basically around the fact that it seems to me that in a lot of American media...
A lot of American media... So Attack was just muted again. I think we're having some kind of permission issue, guys. So if moderators can look into this, one of two things is happening. Either someone is accidentally doing something with the server muting, or someone has gotten a permission they shouldn't have. So let's try once more. Attack, sorry, you're back on the air. Let's see if it will hold. And moderators, please look into what's going on. Go ahead, Attack.
Yeah, it's totally fine. Technical issues happen, right?
Yes.
Anyway, so basically my issue is it seems to me that a lot of especially very progressive and very conservative American media, when it comes to foreign policy analysis, seem to fall over themselves trying to justify the actions of other authoritarian states. So, I mean, you've had, for instance, Tucker Carlson, you know, making his insane positions about Russia that actually they're the good guys in the Ukraine conflict. And I feel like even on progressive media, you have people like, you know, Hassan Abi, for instance, who will say that the U.S. is the aggressor in the Ukraine crisis. And I'm just wondering if it just comes from this impulsive idea that anytime the U.S. takes a position, the U.S. is by default a bad actor, or if it just comes from almost a lack of knowledge on these issues, especially when it comes to issues like Ukraine, where realistically speaking, the U.S. held a secondary role in why Ukraine even came to the situation it is in today.
Yeah. So we have a very interesting situation going on here in the U.S., and you're really getting to it. There are some on the right that are increasingly defending authoritarian states because they're authoritarian and they like authoritarian states. There are some on the left that are increasingly defending authoritarian states, some because they also like authoritarian states, but others because they see opposition to those states as promoting American imperialism. And I am sometimes criticized. I will say on the show, maybe you've even heard me say, I am against the Chavez Maduro regime in Venezuela because I am an anti-authoritarian and they are authoritarian. And I give 10 reasons why. And then people will say, you imperialist Yankee encouraging intervention in Venezuela. And I go, wait a second, when did I say that? I didn't say that at all. And so being against authoritarian regimes that are putatively left is used as a proxy to call you an imperialist. So we're seeing it from both sides for slightly different reasons.
Yeah, I agree. And it seems really weird to me that you will see some people in progressive circles, you know, justify the actions of an incredibly right-wing, almost fascistic state like Russia, which
yes.
You know, has engaged in incredible oppression of homosexual people, even minorities.
Absolutely.
And on the right, it makes very little sense to me because at the same time, you know, the very anti-Muslim right seems to fall over their heels to praise Putin when, for instance, Putin has a literal Islamist dictatorship in the southern part of Russia, in Chechnya, led
yeah.
by a literal Islamist who puts gay people in concentration camps.
Absolutely.
So,
and one of the catchphrases you have to watch out for is if you levy a critique on China with the Uyghurs, Venezuela, Russia, whatever. And then the reaction you get is the U.S. also does that stuff. That should be a red flag because it's like, yes,
that's pure whataboutism.
And I criticize the U.S. for it as well. Right. I mean, it's like I can criticize both and be against invading Russia and still think that some of the things they're doing are horribly authoritarian. The problem is a lot of people don't really want to have that conversation. They just want to say you're an imperialist.
Yeah, I agree. And in many ways, it feels weird to me because, like, you know, being from Denmark, obviously the media perspective here is a bit different.
Yes.
It seems to me that there is a general consensus among left-wing and right-wing media in Denmark, even among the more, you know, socialistic and also more national conservative elements.
Yes.
Russia is indeed acting completely out of turn in the Ukraine crisis.
Right.
And it seems to me like it almost in the U.S. has just turned into an utter thing where you can attack whoever is in power currently.
Right.
So if Donald Trump were in power, then conservatives would probably be like, oh, Donald Trump is showing strength against Russia by talking about sanctions.
Absolutely.
And now because Biden is in power, it's just, oh, Biden, he wants to destroy America by doing sanctions against Russia and destroying everything. It feels like it's just a part of this like hyper-partisan landscape in American politics.
100%. 100%. Listen, where in Denmark are you?
I'm in Aarhus.
Oh, okay. I'm familiar with that. That's a beautiful, beautiful, it's like a small city, right?
Yeah, so Aarhus is actually the second largest city in Denmark, but that doesn't say a lot because Denmark isn't exactly a very populous country.
Yes.
But yeah, I study here. I'm actually originally from northern Germany. There's a Danish minority in northern Germany that I'm from.
Okay.
And so I moved to Denmark in 2017 to study, and I'm doing my master's degree currently in European studies. So obviously European politics is very interesting to me.
Got it. Well, listen, one of the places I've enjoyed the most in the world is Denmark. What's the name of these like open-faced sandwiches that are so popular?
Ah, smørrebrød. Yep.
Yes, yes. Those are delicious, aren't they?
Yeah. The funny thing is, so my mom is actually American and she cannot pronounce that at all.
Yeah, I'm not even trying. I don't think there's even a possibility I could pronounce it. all right. Attack from Aarhus, Denmark. Really appreciate the call.
Thanks for taking my call, David.
All right. There we go, folks. And that is going to do it for calls today. We will take more calls, and I hope to hear from you the next time. We're going to take a quick break and be back with more. All right. Let's get into the mailbag for the week. The mailbag continues to be increasingly popular, both for people who have something constructive and substantive to share and people who have nothing of value to share other than insults, slurs, and the like. You can email info@davidpakman.com if you have a message for us that maybe would be interesting to discuss during the mailbag. Let's start today with the email, "You're a Bully, Paid For by George Soros and Alex Soros." Now, I have to admit, I have never heard the name Alex Soros before, suggesting that shows hosted by Jewish people are paid for by Jewish person George Soros is a very well established anti-Semitic trope. We have been targeted by it for a very long time. I have never been accused of being paid by Alex Soros, and I don't know who that is, presumably the son of George Soros. I don't know. Sounds interesting. I wonder what he's up to. And of course, "You're a Bully. Who am I bullying?" would be the question I have. That is not also not an allegation I have ever faced. Lance wrote in asking about our Facebook situation, saying, "David, I watched your show about a week ago where you talked about Facebook demonetizing your content for 90 days over essentially reporting the news. This got my ire up, and I contacted a friend that works for Facebook who looked into it further. Here is the official reply. Thank you for bringing this to our attention. We've reviewed the content you reported and found it doesn't violate community standards. We apologize for the mistake here and have restored your content and taken steps to ensure it doesn't happen again." And Lance wants to know what happened. Yes, I am now able to announce that thanks to you, about 10 of you, actually, we have a ton of Facebook employees in our audience, it turns out, or friends and family of Facebook employees. Thanks to all of you guys, we have been remonetized on Facebook. A bunch of people wrote in saying, "This is not anti-vaccine content. The David Pakman Show is not anti-vax. This is some kind of false algorithmic thing." And we learned that indeed no real person flagged our account. Something about our post could have been the thumbnail, which included Alex Jones, could have been the text, we don't know, got us demonetized, and it was incorrect. And so a whole bunch of you guys who work at Facebook submitted internal appeals. It took about 15 days or so, 16 days, something like that. But we are remonetized on Facebook, and I have only you guys to thank. So I really appreciate that. Let's continue with the mailbag. Mike wrote in and is not pleased with me. Mike says, David, I noticed that on the January 19th show, you mentioned how to get at-home COVID tests would be in the bonus show. I'm sure you didn't intend this, but putting that content behind a paywall could be viewed as tacky or underhanded way of encouraging subscriptions. The information is not secret. It's why it's just covidtests.gov. Every day, this one is frustrating. Every day, I just tell people what's on the bonus show. And so that day it was like, we're going to talk about the new program to get free COVID tests. We're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about that. You can just Google free COVID tests. It's the first thing that comes up. The information is not secret in any way. I was not encouraging subscriptions with the idea that I would tell you where to get free COVID tests if you get a membership. A little frustrating because, it's a Biden plan. It was all over the news. It's covidtests.gov. But okay, it is what it is. Bill wrote in about the January 6th committee and says, hi, David, sir, there is one thing that would greatly impact voters and voting in 2022 or 2024. If the committee shows somehow that Trump had nothing to do with what happened on January 6th, I know it's unlikely, but stranger things have happened. Think 2016. That's a really good point. So what is this about? Last week, I said, I want the January 6th committee to finish its work before the November elections. Why? If Republicans win in November, as soon as they're sworn in January, they're ending the committee. So I would like the committee to actually finish its work without being forcibly shut down, even though I know that no matter what the committee says, the committee could say Trump was the one guy who planned the insurrection or whatever. And it would not change the minds of voters. In other words, I don't think the results of that committee will make a difference. Bill has a good point, which is if the results were Trump is completely innocent and has no blame whatsoever, no one around Trump has any blame for the insurrection, that actually might impact 2024. And it would be similar sort of to that last minute James Comey press conference. Remember, for all the talk of James Comey being so hostile to Trump and friendly to Hillary, James Comey choosing to do that second press conference about the Hillary email investigation so close to the 2016 election absolutely played a role to some degree. We can't say it was a decisive role, but it played a role in the ultimate outcome. So I don't think that's going to happen, Bill. I agree with you. But if it did, if the results were we finished our investigation and Trump did nothing wrong and neither did anybody around him, that actually would be a factor. I don't expect that that's going to happen. Haley wrote in about Carhartt. I like this story. Conservatives on Carhartt's news revealing their vaccine mandate are big mad and making my night. We definitely should be supporting their business. Just the most recent Facebook post on their page has the right acting like snowflakes. I love the story. So a lot of people, I think, don't know about the brand Carhartt. Now, I'm going to try to accurately describe it. Carhartt is a brand that sells a lot of sort of like working gear, particularly for the cold, or at least growing up in Massachusetts. I would always see people on construction site would have Carhartt pants, fleece-lined Carhartt jackets. And there was this association with Carhartt as being a conservative brand, rightly or wrongly. And it may have been because it became popular with sort of folks who see it as emblematic of rugged individualism and being out doing work, chainsaws and whatever. Anyway, you guys get the point. And growing up, there was always like nearby, I went to like the regular high school and there was an alternative vocational high school. And the vocational high school was significantly more conservative in its makeup. And there was a lot of Carhartt stuff around. So I think there's the association of Carhartt as a conservative brand. That may not even be accurate. Turns out Carhartt requires their employees to be vaccinated. And it has gone crazy with conservatives saying, we will now boycott Carhartt. I saw videos of people burning Carhartt clothes and all of this different stuff. I absolutely love it. I don't know if there is an alternative to Carhartt. Is L.L. Bean really an alternative? It doesn't seem like. I don't know. I don't know much about Carhartt as a brand. But I am loving the instant triggering that we are seeing from these people because their beloved Carhartt says, hey, for safety, you got to be vaccinated to work here. Dustin wrote in. Dustin says, could or would Ron DeSantis pardon Donald Trump? If Trump goes to prison and DeSantis becomes president, could DeSantis pardon Trump to earn the political favor of Trump supporters? And would he? So there's two issues here. And one of the issues is timing. And let me explain what I mean by that. DeSantis would want the support of Trumpists to become president if he runs, meaning he needs the support before being president. He could only pardon Trump once he is president. So now, of course, he could announce while running, if you vote for me, I will pardon Trump if Trump were to be convicted of some crimes, which I don't think is going to happen. So it would be a campaign promise DeSantis could make. He couldn't actually do it until he were president. But I actually see that the growing rift between Trump and DeSantis will keep growing. Trump has been attacking DeSantis of late. DeSantis has come back and fired at Trump a little bit and saying, shouldn't have followed him so much early in the pandemic. So I think that the hostilities between Trump and DeSantis are much, much more likely to continue growing rather than the possibility that DeSantis says, I will save the hero Trump, elect me to keep him safe. I just don't see it. We don't know if Trump's running in 24. We don't know if DeSantis is running in 24, but that's my sense on a DeSantis-Trump pardon. Could he pardon him? Yes. Would he really do it? I don't know that it really helps his strategy. Amanda wrote in, and Amanda said, hey, David, I see in your videos that you've needed to mention when information on a video you're showing your audience are lies and have been debunked. I've noticed you would need to pause the video after each lie to let us in your audience know it isn't true and to remain in compliance with YouTube. Would having a disclaimer on the bottom of the screen be sufficient enough? At the start, mentioning the content we're about to watch is information that has been debunked and is not true. Play the video, stop for your normal commentary. Message on the bottom says this isn't true or something like that. I don't know. I've noticed times taken away to stay in compliance. Was wondering if there's any way around that. Yeah, I don't think so. You know, my understanding that we've gotten from YouTube is you need to actually, the content needs to be, when there is a misstatement, you have to point out that it's a misstatement. And I know it gets a little clunky and we're thinking about ways around it. Remember, we're also on some platforms that are audio only. So having something visually on the bottom of the screen that says these are lies you are listening to wouldn't really help. But I appreciate the sentiment, and we're going to keep working on it, Amanda. Cammy wrote in and says, do Democrats want to lose? David, sir, I've been thinking about this for a while now, but do the Democrats want to lose elections? I know the idea seems crazy, but when I think about the people who were helped by the Republican tax cuts, most of the House and Senate members on both sides of the aisle would be at the income level to profit off of what was done. I do believe that on social issues, Democrats do have strong feelings, but it seems like they are still rich people with a lot to gain from Republican policy. Do they want to profit while also being able to cast no votes they know in the end won't matter because they're in the minority? Crazy thought, but maybe there's some truth in there. So there's two things here. Cammy, you're right that on some issues, Democrats in power seem to have the same interest as Republicans, but they don't hide that. We know that. There's lots of issues where you actually just ask them their opinion, and there's very little difference between Democrats and Republicans. And we've talked about actual interest in enforcing antitrust, right? I mean, there's a bunch of different issues. At the end of the day, Democrats benefit from being in power and the prestige that comes with it more than saving a couple of points off of their taxes if the top tax rate is 37 instead of 39. So while you're mathematically correct that many Democrats in power in the House and Senate pay slightly lower taxes thanks to the Trump tax cuts, I don't think that those 2 points are enough to make them say, we don't even want to be in power to save those 2 percentage points. I think they have much more to gain by being in positions of power. That's my instinct. And of course, you know, you might disagree, but that's all the evidence I've seen points in that direction. All right. If you have something you want to ask me, talk to me about, inquire about, criticize, demand a correction for even, you can email info@davidpakman.com and maybe your email will be featured on next week's mailbag. Remember that the show doesn't have to end now. We do the bonus show every day for our members, and you can sign up at join.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you. Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
WRCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh, right here on
O's from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Enough is enough. It's time to release Mr. Peltier. And that Senator Schatz would put that in a letter, a well-written letter, that as concisely as he did, again, puts this right on the desk of the president. He's got to deal with this. He's got to correct this wrong.
Pressure is growing on President Biden to commute the life sentence of Native American activist Leonard Peltier, who has spent 46 years in prison. Peltier is 77 years old and has just tested positive for COVID. Amnesty International considers him a political prisoner who was not granted a fair trial. We'll speak to his lawyer, Kevin Sharp, a former federal judge. Then President Biden set to meet with New York's new mayor, Eric Adams, this week after Adams announced his plan to end gun violence.
We will start by putting more officers on patrol in key neighborhoods throughout the city.
We'll look at the national debate over policing with Patrice Cullors. She's one of the founders of Black Lives Matter and author of the new book, An Abolitionist Handbook, 12 Steps to Changing Yourself and the World.
We have created a system that over-relies on law enforcement and prioritizes their money, their budget, their needs over everything else. Now is the time that we redirect resources back into our communities.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The UN Security Council is holding an emergency session today over ongoing tension at the Russia-Ukraine border. Russia's amassed some 100,000 troops near Ukraine, but denies it plans to invade and continues to demand NATO commit to halting its eastward expansion. The U.S. Senate is expected to unveil a bill imposing possible new sanctions on Russia, including some that could take effect even before any possible invasion. The U.K. also threatened to impose new sanctions against Russia on Friday. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Western panic over the situation is destabilizing Ukraine's economy.
The politics have to be balanced, and the journalists, if they want to understand the situation, let them come to Kiev. Are tanks driving here in our streets? No, but it feels like this if you're reading the media. If you're not here, then you feel like this.
On Friday, President Biden told reporters he'll soon move U.S. troops to NATO countries in Eastern Europe. Meanwhile, NATO's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said members of its military alliance are offering training and equipment to Ukraine, but that there are, quote, no plans to deploy NATO combat troops to Ukraine, unquote. Nearly 2,000 child soldiers in Yemen have died in combat since 2020, according to UN investigators. Houthi rebels have pressed children as young as seven into the fight against the Saudi-led coalition, with kids in one summer camp taught to clean weapons and evade rockets. The report also found Saudi-led forces continue to inflict heavy casualties on Yemen civilians. The UN says violations of international law have become the norm rather than the exception in Yemen. This comes as the United Arab Emirates say they intercepted and destroyed a ballistic missile fired by Yemen's Houthi rebels amidst the ongoing attacks between the parties. Israel's president is now on an official visit to Abu Dhabi for the first time 16 months after the two nations normalized relations. A new report from the UN finds over 100 people